Well, one thing I wanted to say right off the bat, I am so glad that today is name tag day, because don't have any strangers here. But it is sort of a bit of a homecoming, because we lived here for 25 years. We worshiped at the Jupiter Tequesta Church, at the Suncoast Church, where I served as an elder. And, of course, we have a lot of friends and family right here. So it's really good to be back here amongst our friends and our family. Let me ask you, how many of you have ever been up to Mount Dora to visit the children's home and the Bible school up there? Just quick show of hands. All right, we've got several. I want to, first of all, invite you to come up there. We have a 70-acre campus in Mount Dora. We've got apartments where we could put you up for the night. We've got dorms. Bring your youth group up. We can put you all to work doing some things. You can have a devotional, interact with the kids that live in the home. We've got a great play area, a big barbecue area. So we would just love to invite all of you to come up there and visit the work. And I want to thank all of you for your support. I saw a copy of your bulletin last week and this big mountain of supplies that you had put together. And the fellas came off the truck last week and they say that you wouldn't believe the amount of stuff that came from the Palm Beach Lakes Church. So we are very thankful to all of you for supporting us. You know, this congregation supports us through their budget. Many of you support us individually. And without that type of support, we wouldn't be able to operate. So today I'm here to tell you about the work, the ministry that you are involved in, because this is something very unique within our brotherhood. You know, Florida is a state of about 19 million people. There are very few children's homes in this state. Other than Mount Dora, there is one down in Hialeah. But for a state of 19 million people, that's not too much, is it? How many Christian schools do you think there are within our brotherhood? Schools that go from K through 12, supported by the Churches of Christ in this state of Florida. There's one. And there's only one that we know of in the country that has both a children's home and a K through 12 school together on one campus. And today I'm going to tell you about what we have there. You know, we are two entities together. We are both a children's home and a Christian school. And from the very beginning, it was that way. And we believe that the Bible is the basis for everything we do. Okay? Everything about our work is Bible-based. And we look to James 1:27 that says this, pure and faultless religion is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Now, generally, as congregations and as people, we do a good job of looking after widows. I would imagine that the church here has a ministry or someone who is in charge of looking after the widows. If a hurricane's coming, or if a widow or widower needs to get to the doctor, they need some groceries, we do a good job of looking after the widows. But what do we do about orphans? How do we look after orphans? Because James says this is pure and undefiled religion, to look after widows and orphans in their distress. Have any of you adopted or fostered a child? Hold up your hand. All right. You have a bit of a greater understanding of what that means, to look after an orphan in its distress. But other than us collecting our money together and sending it somewhere up there, what do we do to look after these orphans? Well, fortunately, this place, the Mount Dora Children's Home, is a way that you can do that through your gifts, through your donations, through the food and the supplies that you send. All of those things help to look after these orphans. In 1945, my goodness, that's a long time ago, 68 years. Not too many of us have been around that long. But 68 years ago, a group of people came together and started this organization. And from the very beginning, it was intended to be both a children's home and a school. And they went not adding one grade at a time. They started off K through 12. And in that very first year, there was three seniors that graduated. Now, we've grown a little bit. Friday night, we had graduation. We had 41 seniors. How many of you are in high school now? How many would be in a senior class, maybe at Palm Beach Gardens or wherever you are? How many seniors? Like 500. You might have 41 kids in one class, right? We had 41 in our whole senior class. And yet, it's a sort of a place where it's very interconnected, where everybody is very involved with one another. And so from the very beginning, the children that were in the home in that first year, there was eight of them, those kids were able to attend a Christian school. They lived in a dorm, they walk across the street, and they go to school in a Christian school. Let's talk for a minute about what it's like right now today in 2013. As I said, there's about 19 million people that live in the state of Florida. There's around 4 million children. Sadly, about 950,000 of them live in poverty. Now, when I go through there, we're going to have a little bit of interaction. You know, the poverty level now is defined as a family of four living with a household income of around $23,000. Now, Joe, it used to be $23,000 was a lot of money, wasn't it? You probably paid, could have bought two of your first houses for $23,000.
Oh, absolutely.
$23,000, though, now for a family of four to live on is not very much. And so there's almost 1 million kids that live in a household like that. Over 130,000 kids are abused every year. Now, here's the startling thing about that statistic. That's only the ones that are reported. Do you suppose there's a whole lot more that don't get reported that the agencies and the police don't know about? I have to think there's at least 2 to 3 times that many. We also see that over 1,400 children die in this state before their first birthday. Now, that's not necessarily of diseases, and that's not of childborn illnesses and things. Most of that comes from child abuse. And finally, this statistic always startles people. 151,000 children, again, these are the reported statistics, are living with grandparents. Any of you raising grandkids? Or any of you know somebody who's raising grandkids? Why is it that there are so many people raising grandchildren now? Why is that? There's some real simple reasons. Okay, there's one of the main ones. Parents are in jail. Why else would a grandparent be raising a grandchild? Maureen?
Parents are on drugs.
Yes, parents are on drugs. Okay. You're missing the biggest one. Parents are dead. That's possible, yes. Divorce, financial reasons, abandonment. The number one reason is because the mother is probably a teenager herself and still living in that home with her mom and dad, because teen pregnancy is where the majority of pregnancies are occurring nowadays for girls under the age of 20. And most of them, do you think they're married? No. Sadly, most of them are not married. And so mom and dad are raising their children, and then their children are having children, and they're not capable of raising those kids. So grandma and grandpa get stuck doing it. And grandma and grandpa are at a point in life where they don't necessarily want to have that burden. They are not capable of dealing with that. And so as those little kids grow up, grandma and grandpa say, I can't do this any longer. And where do you think mom and dad are by that time? They've flown the coop, they're out there doing their own thing again, and it ends up with those types of kids come to us. This is what we typically would think of as the all-American nuclear family, mom and dad and two children, okay? But what happens when dad checks out of the picture? Maybe dad's in jail. Maybe dad just likes to hang out with his buddies after work. He likes to go down to the local watering hole, or he gets involved in a softball league, or he gets, you know, likes to go fishing, and he doesn't come home after work, and he leaves mom to do all the things. Maybe he gets involved on drugs, or maybe he gets involved with another woman. Okay? Dad kind of checks out of the picture. Do you suppose that puts some added pressure on mom? What do you think mom's going to do as a result of this? She may turn to alcohol. She may turn to drugs. She may turn to the arms of another man to help her cope with these sort of things, because she's now got to put the food on the table, make sure these kids get to the doctor, they get to school, that they're taken care of. And it's added pressure on her. And so she might check out of the picture. Now, are these kids orphans? Not in the true sense of the word. They have a set of parents, but are they orphans? In another sense of the word, yes, they are. Because these kids are functioning in a world without a set of parents to look after them. Where do you suppose their focus shifts to? Their focus shifts to themselves, right? They become just in a survival mode. And so what happens is these kids are left out in the world. We know the Bible has the answers. The Bible tells us in Psalms 1, chapter 10, verse 12, "Arise, Lord, lift up your hand, O God. Do not forget the helpless." And I really like this second passage when it concludes, "The Lord sets the lonely in families." The Lord sets the lonely into families. You know, what we try to set up here at Mount Dora is a family type of an organization where these kids come in and they're going to be involved with families. Whoops. Since 1945, these are some statistics of what we've done. 119 children have been adopted by Christian families. We've had 210 children living in foster homes around our area. 1,700 children have lived on our campus in our dormitories. And each and every month, we get at least 100 families from that surrounding area coming to us for assistance, because we provide counseling services. We'll help parents deal with issues that their kids might be going through, or issues that they may be going through as parents. We're providing those types of services as well. Maternity and abortion counseling. Unfortunately, sex still happens for young people today, and I say unfortunately because what ends up happening when you have unprotected sex? Pregnancy, right? What is the number one choice now of young girls who find themselves pregnant? Abortion. Abortion is the number one choice. What would be the number two choice for a young girl who finds herself pregnant? Say it louder. Give up the baby. No, that's the number three choice. Number two choice is to keep the baby. Why are young girls deciding to keep the baby? There's two main reasons. Okay, say that again. Government assistance. That is the number one reason why these young girls are choosing to keep the baby, because once you have a child, guess what? You get on the welfare system. You can then begin to collect money for yourself and for your child. And if you have another child, do you get more money? Yes, you do. That's the number one reason. What's the number two reason why these girls keep the babies? What's that? Well, yes. The number two reason is these girls need somebody to love. And they want somebody to love them. Most of them have grown up in abusive and broken homes. That child that they've carried in their womb now becomes something very precious to them, something that's going to love them and value them, something for them to love. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work that way, does it? These girls are not equipped to go out there and function as a single mother. And what ends up happening is the child ends up in an abusive relationship. A few months ago, I had a call from an area preacher here, or an elder at another congregation. He said, "Tim, we've got an 18-year-old girl here. She's a member of our church, and she's pregnant. She's 7.5 months pregnant, and the boy is not in the picture anymore, and her parents are leaving, and they've told her she can't come with them. They're moving to Connecticut, and she can't come. She doesn't have anywhere to go. Can you all take this girl in?" Well, what do you think we said? We said, "Get in that car and get up here as quick as you can." Well, the girl, she was closer to 8 months pregnant. And what do you suppose we counseled her to do? Give up that baby. Put that baby up for adoption. You're a senior in high school. You have no family. You don't even have the father of this child in your life. Please consider it, putting that child, because we know literally dozens of people that would love to have that child. But she elected to have the baby. She had the baby. We helped her through that. We helped her in the postpartum stage. We helped her get back on her feet. She ended up leaving, going down to back down to this area in Palm Beach County. And I'm sad to report to you that the father came over and visited the mother, saw the baby, and I don't know what they call this when you shake a baby and it, that syndrome. And that baby got removed by the Department of Children's and Families from that mother. But that's just to let you know what can happen. And I'm not saying this to shock you. I'm saying this to let you know that there are good choices that you can make in a bad situation. We provide adoption services, and so we want to let every pregnant girl know that there is an alternative to abortion and to keeping that child. Do you suppose that's an easy decision? No, it's got to be a very difficult decision. Do you suppose, though, that this is the right decision for that child? It is the right decision for that child. And so we provide adoption services. We also provide foster care services. We have families within our area who will foster children. And nowadays, the majority of the children we get through state placements are through the foster care program. You know, it used to be that if you wanted to adopt a child, you could get a child here locally. But where do most people now go to adopt a baby? They're going to another country. They're going to the Ukraine. They're going to Southeast Asia or China or somewhere. Why do you suppose that is? Two reasons. Say it loud. Bureaucracy. Bureaucracy is probably the biggest reason. And the second biggest reason is there's just not that many babies available because, number one, they're being aborted. Number two, the mother is choosing to keep them because that then provides her an income stream. And so there are fewer and fewer American babies available for adoption. This family that you see up here in the picture, they are grandparents. They have 30-year-old children. They have grandkids. But they have fostered 24 children and have adopted four. They have four children living in their home right now. And I just say that because I want you to know that there are people out there in the world who have such a heart, a caring heart for children, that regardless of their age, they want to do what's right for these kids. But what we're really known for is the residential group homes. And that's where the kids come and live on our campus. You see some of the homes here. This is the Luger Cottage. This is the Burton Cottage, the Hamilton Cottage. Kids live in these homes. And then our newest house is the Thompson House. And we have girls that are living over in that home right now with a set of house parents. When we built the Thompson House, we made arrangements on that property to be able to build two more homes, one on the back portion here, one over here, and then this is where the Thompson House sits. But the children's home is a place where kids are loved and nurtured, where they are going to be, they're going to feel comfortable. There's a mother and a father there. Some of these house parents have their own children. You know, if you have been growing up in a home where there's a lot of uncertainty, it's kind of comforting to be able to walk home from school, take your backpack off, throw it on the couch, walk over, open up the refrigerator, and guess what? There's food in there. Get yourself a snack, plop down on the couch, watch a little bit of TV, and not have to worry about, is mom going to take me over to this guy's house tonight? Or am I going to be having to watch my little brother or sister tonight? And who's going to make dinner for us? And who's going to help me with my homework? And how about getting ready for school in the morning? I don't have a thing to wear, and I've wore this same set of clothes the last 4 days. You know what? Those kids don't have to worry about those things anymore, because they've got a house where most of us could relate to the type of home we grew up in. And it's a place where these kids are involved in service to God. Not only are they going to a Christian school 5 days a week, they go to church 3 times a week. And they're involved in a youth group. And they get involved in service projects. Why do you suppose we have these kids involved in service projects? To give back. You know, as I said earlier, where is their focus? Their focus is on themselves. And that's normal, that's natural, because they're survivors. They've had to look out for themselves all the time. But what happens when you shift the focus from yourself to someone else? You suddenly don't feel quite so bad about yourself, do you? You see that there's people out there in the world that are maybe a little bit worse off than you are. And that makes you realize that, hey, I need to be doing what Jesus would have me do. Go out there and be a servant. Develop that servant heart. Now, do you suppose that's an easy thing for these kids to do? No, it's not. Because they've had years of looking out for number one. And it takes time. But it does happen. We want them to learn to do things like how to cook, and how to sew, how to run a power saw, how to do things around the house. You know, things that they probably would not have learned where they were, the environment they were in. How many of y'all know how to play video games? And so do these kids. But how many of you can do practical things that you're going to be able to take with you through life and teach your kids? That's what we want to do. We want to teach them practical things that a mom and a dad are showing their kids, so that when they leave there, they're going to be better prepared to be parents themselves. A relationship with God is an integral part of everything that we do there. As I said, they go to school in a Christian school. They go and participate with their youth groups in church. And so a relationship with God is very important. Do you suppose most of these kids have attended church before they came to the Mount Dora Children's Home? No, shake your head this way. Most of them, I mean, you ask them David and Goliath, Daniel in the lion's den, you ask them, you know, any of the Bible stories, Noah's Ark, they have no clue. They don't know anything about that. And that's understandable. They've never been taught. But have you ever noticed how a child gravitates towards those things? How when you finally tell them and they hear these stories, they love them, they want more. These kids are no different. Every year, we end up baptizing quite a few of these kids who come to know God. And they come to learn about Jesus. And so it's a very rewarding, fulfilling thing for us to have them there. One of the newer programs that we're offering is a single parent program. This is where women come to us. Maybe they've been in an abusive relationship. Maybe they've been living in a domestic violence shelter. Maybe they've just been struggling to make it on their own. Their husband's in jail. He abandoned them. And they're struggling to make ends meet. We now have a program where we take in these single mothers and their children. Okay? And we will provide them housing and food. They'll get a roof over their head, and we'll provide them with food. We're going to provide them transportation around town to and from the doctor or wherever they might need to go, the grocery store. They're going to get health care. They're going to get child care and schooling for their kids. They're going to get to go to that private K-12 school at no charge. If they've got little infants, we have an early childhood center for 2-, 3-, and 4-year-olds. And if their child's even younger than that, we will help care for that baby. We're going to help that mother get her GED, or maybe go back and go to a community college and get an associate's degree. We're going to help that mother with some Christian parenting classes, because God tells us there's a way to raise up a child, right? Are these women familiar with that? For the most part, they're not. We're going to help them with some financial planning, how to balance a checkbook, how to set aside some money for savings, how to be able to go shop at the grocery store and buy the right things without the food stamps and government assistance. We're going to give them some Christian counseling, and we're going to give them a job. They're going to get paid while they're there, because we believe in giving them a hand up, not a hand out. You see, so many of them have been accustomed to the handout. And when they come there, they give up the handout, because they come to us and they have to give up their drinking and their smoking and having boys and men into their apartments, give up their tattoos. But this is what they get in exchange for that. Now let me think about this. I've been in a domestic violence shelter. I've had a kind of a rough life. I got two kids I'm trying to raise. And I can get all of these things for 2 years, and all I got to do is give up my cigarettes and my beer and have my boyfriend over and no tattoos, and they want me to go to church with them. How many women do you think would jump at that deal? Not very many. Not very many. You see, they get accustomed to living in the world. Some of those things, hey, sin's enticing, isn't it? It feels good. So you think, I could get all of that and I give up this. Sounds like a pretty good deal. For about every 50 women that we interview, about two will come into the program. Right now we have three women, and we've got a fourth one coming in, three that have 9 children between them living there, and they love it. And we're just converting another cottage so we can take in 2 more families. So if you know of anyone you think might be eligible for this program, I've got some literature out on the back table on the single parent program. Pick that up or talk to me afterwards. We want to help these single parents and their children get a new start. You see, this becomes generational. Most of the times the mother grew up in a broken home, in an abusive relationship. So naturally, how is she going to raise her kids? The way she knew, the way she grew up, what she was exposed to. We want to break that cycle, because if this doesn't get broken, her kids are going to go through the same thing when they get older. Let's talk for a few minutes now about Christian education. How am I doing on time? Good. Christian education, because as I said, we have a K-12 school. Right now there's 558 students, and all of our faculty, our administration, our board of trustees are all members of the Churches of Christ. And that's been that way since day one. And we want everyone there to come and participate in a Christian school. About 18% of our student body is Church of Christ. So quickly, what percent would not be Church of Christ? Huh? 18 from 100 is 82%. There, very good. 82% are not from the church. Now, does that mean these kids don't go to church anywhere? No. A lot of them go to other denominational churches. Their parents want them to go to a Christian school. Why do you suppose it's so important to parents nowadays to send their child to a Christian school? Not just a private school, but a Christian school. You know what's being taught. You know, it's a Bible-based curriculum. That's right. They want their children in a safe environment, being taught the moral values that are found where? In the Bible. In the Bible. Do all private schools adhere to that? Not necessarily. Most of the private schools are focused on the curriculum, preparing these kids to be able to go to college. And that's not a bad thing. We do the same thing. We're preparing these kids to go to college, but in a Bible-based way. We're accredited by the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools. We have 127 employees, of which 25 are alumni. Now, that's kind of odd. How many of you would go back to work at your high school alma mater? And these aren't all just teachers. They're cafeteria workers, groundskeepers, maintenance workers. They came back for one reason. They're not getting paid, so it's not the money. You can make far more money working in the state school system or somewhere else. They come back for one reason. What do you suppose that is? They want to give back. They believe in the mission. They believe in what this institution is all about, and they want to give back. Friday night, this young man was honored as a National Merit Scholar finalist. Y'all have any of those at Palm Beach Gardens or Jupiter or anywhere else? You have a National Merit Scholar finalist? Can you imagine having one out of a school of only senior class of 41? Not only did we have a National Merit Scholar finalist, this young man was just appointed to the U.S. Naval Academy. He's our valedictorian. Senator Marco Rubio and Congressman Webster came, interviewed this young man, flew him up to Washington, and they said from the minute he walked in, they knew he had the right stuff. This young man is going to Annapolis next month. Our kids are involved in technology. Next fall, we will start our iPad initiative, where all kids in 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade will have iPads, communicating back and forth with their teachers. They have that yet at your all schools? iPads? Well, at this little school, we're making sure that these kids are prepared to go out into college and into the workforce, because technology is something that is not slowing down, is it? This device over here, it's called the Da Vinci robot. You ever heard of the Da Vinci robot? Anybody in medicine? The Da Vinci robot does microsurgery, and it can be done either right there next to the patient, or it could be done from a remote location. The company that manufactures that selected our school to come and host a symposium, and they invited doctors and hospital administrators from all over Central Florida. And they chose our school because of our commitment to technology and because of the very high academic standards that we have. Our kids are involved in science. They're involved in the fine arts. We have drama, band, athletics. We recently had a state champion. He placed number one in the state in the triple jump, number three in the high jump, and number five in the long jump. He just got a scholarship full ride to David Lipscomb University. Two of our football players were just given full scholarships to Harding University. And so athletics is part of a well-rounded student, isn't it? I mean, it's not everyone chooses to do athletics, and that's why we have these other programs. But let's talk for a minute about what sets Christian Home and Bible School apart from other schools. There's something very unique about us. And it begins with our mission of educating for life and eternity. You see, we have to take these kids and prepare them once they leave high school to go out into the workforce or go out into school and be able to compete with other kids that are their same age. But more importantly, we have to prepare them for eternity. How long are we here on this earth on average? 75, 80 years maybe? If we're lucky, we get to be like Earl Brown, we might get to 90, we might get to 100. But how long is eternity? Do you want to spend eternity separated from God? And if it weren't for the programs we're offering to some of these kids, they would never have that relationship with God. And so each and every day our kids attend chapel. And regardless of the age, whether it's the early childhood center, you'll see these kids, even the 2-, 3-, and 4-year-olds, have chapel every day. The elementary school, the middle school, and the high school, they attend chapel every day. The Bible is part of the curriculum. It's not an elective. It's like math and science and English. And you get all the way to the 12th grade, you can't say, oh, I'm done with Bible, I don't have to take it anymore. No, you can't. You're taking Bible every year until you graduate. Our kids are involved in community service. Every senior has to complete 100 hours of community service in order to graduate. You won't get your diploma. Now, in the public school system, you can still get your diploma. You probably won't get bright futures if you haven't done your community service, right? You won't get your diploma if you haven't done your community service at CHMBS. So our kids are involved in programs like Best Buddies. They have Best Buddies down here. It's working with severely mentally and physically handicapped children. In Lake and Sumter counties, our school sends more students to the Best Buddies program than any other school, because these kids are committed to helping those who are less fortunate. We do programs like Habitat for Humanity. Last year, a group of students put together their own service club, and they called it The Way. You familiar with the phrase, The Way? You remember in the book of Acts, the first Christians were called as being part of The Way? That's where they got their name. Their very first project, they wanted to collect some articles of clothing. They managed to get 1,000 pieces of clothing, took them into downtown Orlando, and passed them out at the local homeless shelter. What do you suppose these kids were doing as they were passing out these pieces of clothes? They were showing Jesus living in them, weren't they? They were showing a servant heart. Do you suppose these people really connected with that? You know they did. We have Spiritual Emphasis Day on our campus, where the kids and area youth ministers come in and teach every class for an entire day. They're involved in things, See You at the Pole. Do they do that at your school? 7 a.m. on a Thursday morning, parents, grandparents, teachers, faculty, everybody gets together and they pray at 7 o'clock in the morning. Our kids go on mission trips. Now, you probably, as a youth group, may go on a mission trip. Lots of churches send their kids on mission trips. How many schools send their kids on a mission trip? Not very many that I'm aware of. And yet our kids work, and this past year they went down to Panama. The majority of those kids were in the Spanish class. Why would they need to know Spanish if you go to Panama? It's what they speak, right? It's kind of hard to go in there and witness and tell people about Jesus if you can't even talk. And so the Spanish class, they were a very important part of that whole project. We do Veterans Day. Most places, Veterans Day is a holiday. For us, it's a celebration day because we have a huge parade on our campus. We invite all the veterans from Lake and Sumter County. We'll have anywhere from 500 to 1,000 people come and pack our gymnasium, plus the 500 students that are there, so we can honor our veterans. We want our young people to understand the importance of our military and their role in protecting our freedoms. You know, we have been serving children since 1945. That's a long, long time, 68 years. You can make a difference, and you all are already making a difference. And as we conclude, I just want to show you what you can do here. The number one thing is to pray. Pray for our work. Pray for the children that are there. Pray for the faculty. Pray for the staff who are there counseling these kids. Prayer works. We see it each and every day. Prayer is so powerful. Congregational monthly support, and we are very blessed that this congregation chooses to support us through their budget. But just as important is individual support. Some of you may decide you'd like to give to us on a regular basis, and there's some literature out front, and or you could see me about that. You may want to honor and pay tribute to someone or make a memorial gift. You may want to participate in our Change for Children program. Those little coin cans, boy, those coin cans really add up. Last year, we collected almost $38,000 in those little coin cans from all over Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. You know, those types of things, they add up, but they really make a difference. Our food and supply trip, well, we talked about that. You all went above and beyond. That was incredible. I was at Earl Brown's house last night, and I saw the front of your bulletin from last week, and I saw this big mountain of things that you had supplied. And then it clicked when the guys on the truck told me what they had encountered when they got here. And we're so appreciative of that. You may be at a stage of your life or you might want to be thinking about estate planning. Consider putting us in your estate or your will. And then finally, tell others about our work. You know, this is a resource that is yours. You all support this. You're part of it. If you know of a child that is in need, if you know of a single mother that's in need, it may or may not work out. But how do you know unless you put them in touch with us? It doesn't cost anything to make a phone call, to have an interview with someone, but it could make an eternal difference in their lives. And so use us as a resource. We're there to help you. The people that we take in don't have to be members of the church. And trust me, they don't have to be clean and perfect. You know, we take them all in. We take them all in. My wife likes to say, you know, we catch them and Jesus cleans them. We're fishers of men. And you know, that makes sense. We catch them and Jesus cleans them. We leave that up to Him. And so if you know of someone who you think might be a candidate for our services, give us a call or take a piece of literature there. Because caring can't wait. It can't wait. The world is accelerating, and it's not accelerating necessarily in a good way. We see things out there. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to watch the news or to see the movies and see what's happening all around us. Okay? It's up to us as committed Christians to make a difference in the world. And right there at Mount Dora, we have a way to help people that are helpless. So as we wrap up, we got a few minutes. I'd like to leave it for some questions and answers. Anybody have any questions that perhaps we could address here? Okay. His question is, are we receiving any difficulty from the government regarding anti-Christian type things? The answer is no. We're not receiving any resistance. What we are receiving, or we're not receiving any money. Okay? State budgets have been cut. Used to be we got state-placed children through DCF, and they would place them in the children's home. Now, because of budget cuts, they put them in foster homes, because foster homes are cheaper. And some people have set up little businesses called foster care homes, and they get 3 and 4 and 5 kids, and they're making $500, $600, $800 a month. And do you think all that money is going to the kids? Not necessarily. So, no, we don't get any resistance from the government. In fact, the government, they are looking to us because the problem is so big. They need faith-based groups like us to help deal with the problem. They just don't want to pay for it. And I understand. I understand. You got to make cuts somewhere. Any other questions? Well, I know we're up against the clock, so I'll be here afterwards. I'd be happy to talk to anyone. As I said, there's literature out in the lobby. Thank you so much for your support of our work. Thank you for having me here today. It's been a delight to be here amongst all of you. And I look forward to coming back sometime in the near future.